Welcome to Backflips and Nerds, the podcast that gives you a decidedly British take on baseball and softball. I'm your host, John McGee, and joining me today to talk the trade deadline and the Olympic return for baseball and softball are Greater London Softball Minors Division 3 left-handed pitcher of the week, Will Cook, and a man who's earned his baseball stripes writing for the excellent Banish to the Pen, as well as our own fair blog, Darius Austin. How are you guys?
Very well, thanks, John. Are you well?
I'm good, thanks. Darius?
Yeah, very good, thank you.
Brilliant. So we'll start off with a little quick roundup of the week in baseball. And there are two big stories this week. The first and most obvious was the closure of the trade deadline on Monday, a historic trade deadline day with 18 deals, the most since the mid-90s. Some big, some small, plenty for us to get into, and that's going to be our substantive conversation later in the programme. Before that, we're going to do a little bit of an introduction to ourselves. This is our very first episode of Backflips and Nerds, so bear with us a little bit. We're going to talk a little bit about baseball and softball at the Olympics. So we'll start there, guys, I think. That's pretty big news. It was thrown out. There was no baseball and softball in London in 2012, much to all our disappointment. It's not there in Rio this week and for the next month, but it's going to be back, unsurprisingly, given the location, in Japan, in Tokyo in 2020. So we'll start with you, Will. You like me, play softball. Are you glad to see softball back in the Olympics?
I'm definitely glad to see softball back, because I think with the Olympics, it's all about, because it's about amateurs, essentially. And with softball, it is an amateur's game. So it's great for players, and that'll be the absolute pinnacle. If somebody gets the softball Olympic gold, there's nothing you can do better than that, really. And we've been in Japan, and they love baseball and softball. So absolutely, I can see it going down really well. And they've already got the infrastructure there to play it. So in terms of softball, I'm really, really excited about seeing that. I think it's only going to be women's, isn't it? I believe. Or haven't there? Because it only has ever been women's in the past.
Yeah, it has, yeah.
I think in terms of baseball, if it's in the middle of the season, it's going to be kind of a diluted version of the with the MLB season going on. We've already found it with the World Baseball Classic that, you know, some players just don't want to play in it, and that kind of, yeah, just dilute it a little bit. But in the next 4 years, I think it'll be cracking.
Brilliant. What about you, Darius? Do you have any quick reactions on baseball getting back into the Olympics?
Yeah, I certainly think it's exciting to see, and maybe will help some more people to get into it. Obviously, the Japanese love it, and I think that will create a good atmosphere for it. But the fact that MLB, there's no way they're ever going to let any players, you know, take a break to participate or anything like that, does mean that obviously the level of play might not be quite what we're used to seeing. But for the casual fan who watches the Olympics, I'm sure that isn't going to bother them. Perhaps will encourage a few more people to follow the sport more seriously afterwards.
Sorry, Will, you go on.
I was going to say, it's a real shame because Team GB have really been progressing, and for it not to have been at the last one must have been a real shame for them, like, because it was a real good opportunity for them to kind of show off the sport and let it grow, because we know we've got, it really is growing in Britain. There's so many people who can't believe how many divisions there are in London, and it's spreading all over the place. So, yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't believe how many, when I was doing a bit of research before setting up the blog and the podcast and thinking, you know, is there going to be anyone who's going to want to listen to this? I was surprised how many leagues there were. There's one in every major city of the country, certainly softball-wise. I mean, baseball's a bit more of a niche concern because you need more equipment, more skill, definitely, having had a go at both of them. It's fair to say that our level of softball that we play at Will doesn't need a great deal of skill. It's just more about it's more about having fun. But I guess I mean you mentioning London there, right? There were a couple of sports in London that people, well, I certainly took up handball for a week. you do wonder if it would have been a flash in the pan. I was going to sort of come on to talk a little bit about why it was thrown out, and I guess you guys have probably both alluded to that a little bit, in that it is in the middle of the MLB season. Do you think that would be a big problem? Do you think the quality of the competition would be good enough to sustain it staying there for a while?
It would certainly make it more of a level playing field. I was looking at some of the rosters, and there are, you know, there were taking players in the past. I'm not, you know, and it was during the MLB season, so I don't really know what the. I think they're going to be the American teams be made up predominantly of AAA players who could sort of go out and, but countries in sort of especially Japan and Holland are quite big into it, and Italy and stuff. Yeah. They'll be able to put their best team out, and they might be able to compete at least, which would make it, you know what it's like with the basketball when the Americans go over and like the Canadians with the hockey, and they just beat everybody. So I think it's good. I think there's some sports that like American football is never going to get in the Olympics because it's so skewed towards the Americans. There's nobody else really plays it to that level. So that could be a reason as well why they...
I guess that's the point, isn't it? I mean, it's absolutely... I think what a lot of people in Europe, and particularly in the UK, don't seem to realise is how popular MLB particularly, but baseball as a broader concern is, particularly in Latin America. And I think that... Darius, do you think that might be something that's behind the decision to bring it back? Because it is a huge mass participation sport in Asia and in South America.
Yeah, I think it definitely helps a lot that it's being held in Tokyo. I think probably played a huge amount to the decision. One thing I'm thinking about when you see the other things that are getting added is they're really targeting younger audience. I think skateboarding's in. And there's a couple of other, I think there's some kind of sport climbing, I think they've called it, is what they're...
I missed that.
Couldn't come up with a name, but I think they're very much...
still not in, but we've got sport climbing.
Yeah. So I think they're obviously looking at that younger demographic, and perhaps this will be a case of if they do think it's going to be popular, then they'll leave it in, and if they don't, then they'll take it out. But that remains to be seen. I suppose it might depend on how many people get their attention captured by it at the games. But it does seem like they're going that way of, you know, let's just try out a bunch of things and see what sticks.
Yeah, it looks like Thomas Bach and his friends at the IOC have maybe got a different demographic spreadsheet as the one that MLB have got about their age curve. Maybe Rob Manfred's been telling them a few fibs.
We were talking about where it's going to be next and whether it'll stay until like 2024. If it's in LA, then I think we can more or less we know that it'll continue and have baseball if it's in America. But I think it was Budapest, Paris and Rome. So maybe we could keep it for another one after that. But I think, as Darius was saying, it'll really depend on where it is. I don't think Rio were willing to build baseball stadia.
No.
Any sort of preparation, because it's just not going to really get used all so much in others. Yan Gomes, I think he's the only... he's Brazilian, but other than that, I think it'd be unlikely.
I guess it certainly gave me an image to conjure with when I read the news. Beyond all the sort of weeping and cheering from the small resolute fan base for baseball and MLB here in the UK, my initial thought was firstly, great. Secondly, I really hope they get Ichiro to light the Olympic flame. That would be pretty awesome. I'm going to start a campaign. We can start the campaign here through this podcast and through the blog for Ichiro to light the Olympic flame.
Yeah, I'm sure the Japanese will be on board with that. So,
brilliant. Well, there we go. Maybe that'll get us a following in Japan if we start that. Let's start the petition here. Okay, right. So let's move on now. As I said earlier on, we were going to do a little bit where we introduced ourselves. I think in the longer term, there may be more than just the three of us who are joining you today on the podcast. We've got quite a few other people who have already contributed to the blog and others who are going to come on to talk to us as and when we touch on a few specific teams. The fourth member who will hopefully be a regular contributor, Tom Pringle, isn't able to join us this evening, but we thought we'd tell you a little bit about ourselves, a little bit about how we got into baseball, our favorite teams and so on. So who wants to go first, guys? Anyone want to put their hand up?
Yeah, sure, I can go.
Go on, Darius.
We'll go with you. So how did you get into baseball?
Well, my route into baseball was actually through fantasy. So I had a group of American friends who sort of one year were looking for a fantasy league. And they had an extra slot, you know, they wanted an even number of players. And I'd played fantasy football before. And for whatever reason, I sort of thought, oh, this sounds kind of interesting. So I decided to give it a go and ended up becoming hooked on the numbers. So I loved the stats and everything about sort of digging into the detail. It became infinitely more interesting than fantasy football to me. So I sort of got into following the game that way. And in progress, that was the first year, first full season that Tim Lincecum pitched for the Giants, his first Cy Young year. So I started following him along, realised that he was like a really fun pitcher. He was striking everybody out. And obviously, he's very entertaining to watch. Sadly, not performing at quite such the same level these days. But
now walking everyone.
Yeah, walking everyone. And yeah, he's lost quite a few miles per hour on the old fastball, which is a shame. But at the time, 08 and 09, he won the Cy Young both years. So he sort of made me become a Giants fan at what turned out to be quite an opportune time.
Yeah, definitely. It only got better from yeah, Tim Lincecum. As his star waned, the Giants rather went in the opposite direction.
Yeah, so three World Series titles since I started following is not bad.
Not bad at all. And how about you, Will? What was your route into the sport?
So I was going for a job in American sports trading, but I didn't know anything about any of the sports. So I went down to to a game shop and bought like the four games and just played and studied to try and get this job because it was a reasonable job. And only two people applied for it and there was two jobs available. So I got it. but I remember talking about the Giants, one of my first shifts, I was working with the team, but not for them. A bookmaker, and one guy was on about the Giants, and this was in 2010, saying they were going to win the World Series, and he was yapping and yapping and yapping, and the guy said, right, and they were about seven games off the wildcard spot at this point. He said, right, I'll give you 100-1, and he put a fiver down there, and of course they won the division, and then there were outsiders for every single like rounded it, and then they won the playoffs, and then they won the World Series, and he paid up his 500 quid, and he even got a mention in his wedding speech because that paid for a lot of the grub. So yeah, so after that I needed a team, so I picked a team that were kind of upcoming, and a couple of my mates were fans of the Twins as well, so I took on them, and they were in the playoffs that year, and I was like, okay, bandwagon-ish, and then they were awful for 4 years. And then they were good, and I got really excited, and then this shit happened. But now I'm done. I'm a Twins fan for life now. That's not going away. That's how I got into it. It's been a tough 6 years. But...
yeah. Do you regret that consequence of making that ill-informed choice to bind yourself with Minnesota?
No, I'm a glass half full sort of person, and it was always like, because there's a period, it's normally around July, August time, where I really start looking at the minor league box scores, because we're not going to make the playoffs. It's like, oh, who's coming up? And we had a good farm, we still do, but it's just been so nasty to watch every sort of, apart from one of them, really struggle in the majors after being so good in the minors. But yeah, I think eventually, this is the beauty of American sports, to try and give everybody a chance to have their success, I guess. But no, I'm not regretting it at all.
So there are better times ahead. There are better times ahead.
Yeah, definitely better times ahead.
That's your bold prediction.
Yeah.
We'll come on to the trade deadline and what did and didn't happen. And the Twins were active, but in rather strange fashion. So we'll talk a little bit more about that and later on. They maybe didn't do exactly what people might have thought or wished that they might. So I'm a Boston Red Sox fan. Like Darius, I and you, Will, although to a less successful extent, I was very much a bandwagon jumper. For me, I got into baseball as someone who was an insomniac during university. in the early 2000s, mm-hmm. When baseball was filling up the schedules of Channel 5 alongside Women with Big Boobs and Keith Chegwin's impressive frontage.
They really had a quality lineup in those days, didn't they?
They really did. And it's fair to say that Johnny Gould and David Lengel and Josh Chetwynd have given me far more fond memories than dear old Chegg has ever did. And even more than them, I sort of boarded that bandwagon at a really good time. I mean, I like quite a lot of teams, but the one that really... that really rang my bells was the Red Sox team of Nomar Garciaparra, Pedro Martinez, Manny Ramirez, and of course Minnesota Twins' biggest mistake, David Ortiz. that was the team for me. So many characters: Kevin Millar, Curt Schilling, and so on. And it was a bit of a roller coaster to follow them through Pedro Martinez getting shelled in Yankee Stadium, through to what happened the following year. And I was hooked on baseball from then on, and the fact that it can wax and wane over the course of 162 games, and you're never quite sure whether you're in it or not. The stuff that Will's talked about, the pining on the kids that are coming, it's all going to be better tomorrow, only it so often isn't. I just think it's an absolutely fantastic game and the like that we don't have over here in Europe, and I think it's a real shame that it hasn't got the same currency that some of the other American sports, brilliant as they are, seem to have gained over here in the last sort of 10-15 years. I, like Will, had some good times and some bad times, some very bad times lately. The 13 World Series was a really nice surprise. We'll see where Boston go this year. I rather have a sense of foreboding. Both the Red Sox and the Giants are in the middle of a little bit of a sticky patch at the moment, and it could go either way, I think.
Mm. It was. I only found the other day that Minnesota released David Ortiz. I'd always just assumed it was like a big contract or you'd come to the end, but no, they just released him, and I think there must have been so many beat writers just in denial that they must have traded him or he must have come to the end of his contract and signed a huge contract with Boston, but no, that was a big mistake.
They got nothing, and he was a nothing. He was a complete afterthought for Boston. He couldn't even get a DH spot to pinch hit. Until about 6 to 12 weeks into the season, and then he just went absolutely ballistic, and has been doing so ever since, up until like the yesterday, and he's 40 years old. The next question is about any players or any other teams that you enjoy watching. I mean, I think I've given away my own. One of my own favourites there in Ortiz. But what about you, Darius? Are there any players on your own team or any other teams? You talked a bit about Lincecum. Is there anyone else who makes you feel the way that Lincecum did?
I mean, Buster Posey's number one now, really. He's just a great all-around player. He's got a tremendous swing, and he's really one of the best defensive catchers in the league as well. So I just love watching him play both at the plate and behind it. On other teams, I would say like the elite defenders, Andrelton Simmons, the Angels now, Kevin Kiermaier playing centre field for the Rays, Nolan Arenado for the Rockies, amazing, and Lindor, the Indians' new shortstop as well. All of those guys, I just really love watching, really slick, efficient defence and some of those incredible catches. If you watch Kiermaier's highlight package from last year, it's unbelievable how many sort of home run saving catches and things he makes. So that's fun for me. And then if I'm on MLB TV or something, I just like to find sort of the best starter of the night, really. So whether it's, a guy like Kershaw or Jose Fernandez, John Gray, another Rockies player, he's really come on this year and looks like...
Yeah, their rotation, the Rockies rotation, is starting to look seriously good. Like they might actually, I think they might do something towards the end of the season, but we'll see. Sorry, I cut you off. Carry on.
No. I mean, it's been a long time for them. It seems like they've spent years and years just failing to figure it out every year. And it looks like Gray might be the first guy who can really pitch and pitch well in that ballpark. And he's got some really nasty stuff. So he's a fun guy to watch. So I guess those are the kinds of players that I like to tune in for, really.
How about you, Will?
I think my favourite player when I first started was Johan Santana when he was pitching for the Mets, and apparently he was even better before my time was for the Twins. But what the player that kind of I watched and kind of took me aback the most was when Jose Fernandez came onto the scene, because I've never seen like a ball moves laterally so much than when he's pitching. And I don't know how it's such a joy when they're leaving a ball because they think it's away and it actually misses inside. It's just awesome. One of the players that I really like to watch as well, he's getting on a bit now though, is Brandon Phillips, because that's a guy who enjoys playing the game and just knows how to kind of broadcast it so openly. And he's such a nice sort of, so good with fans, and it's great to see that in the game. So and he was a very good hitter and second base in his time as well. But no, yeah, I'm in a few fantasy leagues as well, so my loyalties just get shipped all over the show. So he goes on year on year. I'm really enjoying Max Kepler at the moment. I mean, that's just that little silver lining.
He looks great. Good. So good.
Yeah, he's a bit like sort of Trevor Story in a way that he's really outperforming his minor league numbers. And the sort of analysts are thinking, no, it's not going to keep going. But I suppose if the throwing the pitch is harder, then he comes off the bat harder, and that's why he's hitting.
Well, one thing I've been reading about Kepler is everybody agreed he had very good pitch recognition, and that seems to have carried over to the majors. So perhaps it's a bit more sustainable than people might think at first from his minor league numbers.
Yeah, totally. He's most of his home runs are just really hard line drives. They're still on the up as they go over the fence, which is a really promising sign, because I think hard hit rate is one of the biggest signs of, like, as you say, sustainable. So yeah, I'm excited about him and the European as well, which is a real rarity.
Although the Red Sox Italian sensation Andrew Benintendi is also he was being called the other night. I think that's a dubious claim. He could be there in Rome. He could follow Ichiro in carrying the flag for the home nation. Let's say Andrew Benintendi 2024 follows Ichiro 2022 in the baseball Olympic pantheon. Again.
Anthony Rizzo did he play for Italy at the World Baseball Classic?
I think he did.
This was some weird connection. Which, definitely helped them out a little bit. But I think Benintendi over Rizzo, for sure.
Anthony Rizzo, Andrew Benintendi, and the ghost and corpse of Joe and Dom DiMaggio. So I Darius, I think you made a really good point about, and I've been thinking about this. I, like you, really like watching good defensive players, and I wonder if that's because I'm a huge cricket fan and kind of came to it from that, and maybe that's where there's some degree of similarity. Although I think that, you know, there's a bit of a slight on baseball from cricket players and cricket fans that they use a glove, but some of the players that you see, some of those elite players that you mentioned, so the Simmons and the Lindors and the Arenados, you've never seen cricket players make plays like that ever. I think to add to you, I think that one or two that I enjoy watching a lot that you didn't mention but could easily have mentioned, Jackie Bradley Jr. as a Red Sox fan, I feel duty bound to mention, and also Kevin Pillar from Toronto. He's up there with Kiermaier, I think, is the absolutely elite centre fielder in MLB at the moment. Just to pick out a couple of others, I'm a huge Jose Fernandez fan too. You can't not be. Watching Ian Kershaw is just unlike watching anything else in any other sport. Not far behind, some of those Mets guys, Syndergaard, DeGrom. I have to say, and this is a slightly controversial point, I don't like watching Jake Arrieta. I always feel slightly worried that his shoulder's going to pop out at any moment. It's just so awkward. So amongst the elite pitchers, he's the one I think I have the least fun time watching. I think you've picked some good guys there. There's a few of the that Reds team. You mentioned Brandon Phillips there, Will. I think there's a few guys like that. Up until this week, you maybe have said the same about Joey Votto being a fans guy. Jay Bruce, who we'll talk again a little bit more about in due course. He was a real fans guy, a likable team with the exception of their closer up until recently, I think. who again will no doubt pop up in conversation later on. And just to sort of flip that around, is there any team or any player that you particularly hate, Will?
Player that I don't like. Well, there's players like Reyes and Chapman and that you can't really condone. But in terms of players that I suppose this weird thing. It was interesting having Miguel Sano in right field. You know when you watch.
That's a very generous way to put it. Interesting.
And you go, and it even happens in my softball league. And I play in the bottom division of softball. You hit it there, and you're like, oh, and it's just caught. Every time I went to right field, and it was like, oh dear, and you felt like you were under it yourself. And I didn't like that very much. So I'm pleased that he's moved just to like DH and hopefully he'll get third base. But I don't know, you know, it's so well oiled that defensively, like, it's so rare when you see a mistake, you don't even see it coming. But I don't have anything against that. The Yankees aren't my. Anybody from the UK that has a Yankees hat on, I just assume knows isn't a baseball fan, but anybody with any other cap on, I'd be like, they might, you know, I'd be willing to chance my arm, but they might want to talk about baseball. The Yankees have got a very good brand, but they're quite unlikable, aren't they?
Have you ever tried that, Darius? Have you ever stopped someone in an LA Dodgers or an Atlanta Braves hat in the street and tried to initiate a conversation? Because I have, and it didn't work. So maybe Will's been talking to some different people to me.
I don't think I ever have tried. No, I feel like LA caps are getting more common as well now amongst people who don't actually follow baseball. Like, I think that you see more of them just in shops and that. Just for, you know, a bit like the Yankees, nowhere near as common as the Yankees cap, of course, but I think it's plausible that you'd run into a fan wearing an LA hat who didn't have any idea who the team were.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've never actually stopped anybody wearing something and tried to engage them in conversation.
I'm told that the Braves connection is something to do with a great number of very successful rappers who are from the Georgia region, who are all rocking the Atlanta Braves swag. So maybe that's more the Lil Wayne fans than the fans of Julio Teheran. I think actually I'm going to walk down Tottenham Court Road on Monday because you see quite a lot of them there and ask every single person in a Braves hat if they know who Julio Teheran is, and if they don't, I'm going to throw it under a bus. That'll probably end well. How about you, Darius? Any players you have a particular disdain for?
I guess AJ Pieczynski is probably on everybody's list, really.
Yeah.
It seems like most baseball players don't like him either. They're sort of fun police type guys, like Brian McCann. He had that thing with Carlos Gomez, was it last year, where he went off at him just because he celebrated a home run a little bit. Those guys who are sort of all play the game the right way and they don't actually want anybody to have any fun. I don't particularly enjoy that kind of attitude. But there's not anybody specifically, you know, no teams or anything. I've got to hate the Dodgers on sort of a technical level because I'm a Giants fan, but I don't actually, you know, I love watching Kershaw. I think he's amazing. So I don't hate them to the extent where I can't actually say anything nice about them.
I think, like you, Will, I think the Yankees bear the brunt of my irritation. But then as a Red Sox fan, that's kind of par for the course. Particularly as a Red Sox fan who came to the game in 2003 and sat through watching the celebrations of some of the most insufferable sports people one could ever wish to lay eyes on. And I'm not just talking about A-Rod. I have a particular disdain for Derek Jeter. He would probably be top of mind. I think he's very clearly a great, great player, but genuinely very overrated. And we'll maybe have that conversation another time because I think it could take a whole hour.
I'd say before you go, one player I really like watching is Bartolo Colon.
Oh, yeah.
When he's batting. And I know we were saying how we like good things, but when he hit that home run, was it the start of this season, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
Yeah, about a month in, I think, yeah.
Yeah, the reaction from the commentators was so good. And yeah, I'm a big fan of the underdog. So that was, and the fact that his hat falls off every time he swings is going to be a shame when he retires.
Well, that happens with Hanley Ramirez as well, and he's actually good. So well, depending on your definition of good, yeah. So I think that I have most animus towards the Yankees, although after his decision to shy away from the trade to the Cleveland Indians this weekend and sort of push that really likable group of elite level talent at a tiny team into the realms of being super stellar and potentially unbeatable for the rest of the season. I think Jonathan Lucroy is safely off my Christmas card list. And he would previously have been on my other list of players that I really enjoy watching. As would a number of the Milwaukee Brewers, including the ones who've been naughty in the past. I don't know why. I have a bit of a soft spot for the Brewers. Okay, so yeah, that's a good entry point into us, and we'll ask the same questions of Tom next week. I know that he's got some particularly strong opinions about a number of players, strongly negative that is. So we'll wait to hear them. I know that he certainly shares your view, Darius, on the baseball fun police. So yeah, I'm sure he'll tell us all about why they should be sent to have a long sit in a quiet room where nobody else is and shout themselves into an irate fury themselves. Okay, so moving on to the substantive discussion for this week, we thought it would be an appropriate time to talk about the trade deadline. It's a good time for us to have our first episode because there really is something chunky and worth talking about. So the trade deadline passed on Monday, 9 p.m. Eastern Seaboard Time, or 4 p.m. here in the UK. So one of the few things in baseball that we were at the advantage of some of our friends and partners over the pond. We could see the whole thing unfolding in front of us, and it's fair to say it went rather frantically. As I mentioned at the top of the show, 18 trades on deadline day, which is a record not broken since 1996. Most of the major contending teams made some purchases and some moves in the last 2 to 3 days as it became clear where the separations were. I think it's been an interesting year where a lot of teams have decided right on the bubble whether they were in or they're out. So we'll talk a bit about the Yankees, a little bit about the White Sox, and one or two other teams who weren't quite sure whether to make that decision until very late on. And that maybe is the reason why things were so frantic on Monday, and one or two teams have made some really nice moves which we'll see who's going to be this year's Toronto Blue Jays or this year's New York Mets and get a real shot in the arm and sort of run away with things between now and September. So I did sort of send some ideas around, but before we start rolling into those, was there any team which caught either of your eye? How about you Darius? Which team sort of struck you as having a particularly good or a particularly bad sort of trade period that last couple of weeks, but particularly sort of Saturday through Monday?
I think, sadly, for you guys in particular, the Yankees probably did the best. I think they were vaulted to the top of almost everybody's farm system rankings after these trades. They got some really nice pieces. Clint Frazier looks like he's going to be a fantastic player. I know Dylan Tate, they got from the Rangers, has not sort of really improved his stock since the draft, but he was a top five pick. So if he gets back to form, he could be maybe a number one or two starter. And Gleyber Torres got from the Cubs as well, is also a pretty highly rated prospect. So very unlike the Yankees to go out and actually trade guys and get some young prospects in return. But I think they got some really nice pieces that are going to form the core of their team in the future.
Did you think that some of the prices that they were receiving in return for some of these players were eye-watering? I found the return, particularly for Chapman from the Cubs, just absolutely mind-blowing. I mean, that was a package 2 to 3 times the size of the one that the Red Sox gave up for Drew Pomeranz, albeit an elite prospect in Anderson Espinosa, for a guy who, albeit absolutely outstanding at what he does, but what he does is throw the ball for one inning. I mean, did you not think that the Cubs and the Indians too completely overpaid for those players, and that the Yankees, that's sort of testament to Brian Cashman and the Yankees doing a really good job, but also just a sort of telling of the climate as it is at the moment and this obsession with having lockdown bullpens?
Yeah, I think the Cubs in particular went a little bit mad. I don't know. I think Torres alone would have been too much, because it's not like we're talking a lot of Chapman. This is, 2 months and the playoffs, and then he's a free agent. So I think to give what they did, and they also threw in Adam Warren, who's been a pretty good Major League pitcher for a few years now. I know he didn't do that well for Chicago this year, but prior to that, when he was on the Yankees before, he was a very useful player to have. And the Yankees will have, full 6 years of team control over Torres. He's not made his debut yet or anything.
Yeah, so. I found the Warren inclusion really strange, because I in the winter thought that Chicago had definitely got the better of that Warren Starlin Castro 2-for-1 Starlo, excuse me. I thought Warren was the really 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 savvy move in that. So for the Yankees to then get him back as essentially an afterthought in a 2 month deal for a closer just seemed weird.
Yeah, that was really strange to me. The Miller trade, it still seems like a lot, and Frazier is sort of one of the best prospects in baseball. Justice Sheffield as well, who they got back, is also sort of got some decent upside. But he's still under control for another 2.5 years. And I think Cleveland, where they are, they've got a good young rotation. There's a lot of, they've got Lindor in there. They've got a lot of really nice pieces that they've got under control for a few years. And I think while it still seems like a lot to give up, Miller's on a fairly friendly deal, considering he's, if not the best, then maybe, just behind Chapman as the best reliever in baseball. I think that wasn't quite so crazy to me. I thought, it's a lot to give up, but I saw it as more justifiable than what the Cubs did. And I know that Matt Trueblood, who used to write for Banished to the Pen and now is at Baseball Prospectus, went absolutely nuts calling the Cubs crazy. He's a Cubs fan, and he couldn't believe what they'd given up to get Chapman. So that was definitely the one that where you were like, what's going on here? I know the Giants did a not quite so surprising, but still gave up a lot to get another reliever in Will Smith as well. So
yeah, we'll come on to the Giants in a minute, because I think there's quite a lot to crunch through with the Giants and their moves. And whether, I think some of the questions with the Giants is whether those were moves for now or for the sort of slightly longer term future. So before we'll come on to talk about some NL teams in a minute. But Will, was there, your reaction to those Yankees deals, and was there any other team that you thought had a particularly good or a bad time of it?
I understand that. I think the Yankees got a good deal for Chapman, but I also think that the Cubs, It depends how much you value this year, really, because they've got a really good postseason rotation. They can take the bottom end out, and really having Chapman at the back end and moving Rondon down, is they've got such a good team now, and they're just going absolutely all in for the World Series. And that given the length of time, given they haven't won it in so long, okay, that they've got a good team for the foreseeable future as well. And I think if that can increase their chances by a little bit, then, this is the time to do it. I understand that the weighting of the trade, but if they come October, November, and they've got the World Series, and Chapman does what he normally does, then I think that's, they'll probably say that they did the right thing. There's been some interesting trades on the other end of the spectrum. I thought the Matt Kemp one was two teams just swapping mistakes. And I think, didn't they immediately release Hector Oliveira?
The Padres have DFA'd Oliveira on Monday as soon as they were actually able to, yeah.
Yeah, whether he was even allowed into the stadium or met anybody, or was just straight out the door.
I believe he wasn't. I believe he was told not to come to San Diego.
I think the Royals have just ruined it for everybody, though. The fact that they have won the World Series and then got to the World Series the previous year with a very substandard rotation and won it through their bullpen has just meant that sides are like if they've got a serviceable reliever, they know they can get so much for him. And there's guys that are focusing on one of the Twins trains, Fernando Abad, was completely off anybody's radar. He has a good half a season, and you can flip him for...
nothing. Let me tell you, that was nothing for nothing.
Well, the Red Sox must see. I'm not as clued up on the whole of the minor leagues, but
Pat Light with his eight runs in 2 1/3 innings. Yeah, that's stellar stuff.
Yeah, I think he can improve on that.
He can get better than that, but there's a sixth inning guy.
Yeah, seventh, eighth inning guys that, you know, it's very difficult to value prospects because, you know, even the top ones, you know, you getting a guy that you know is major league standard is difficult to value against a guy that's going to be up in 2-3 years in some instances. But no, it wasn't quite the blockbuster one of last year where some huge names went around, but it was good to see lots of people moving about. We have to talk about the Angels Twins trade as well.
Yeah, we'll come on to that, but before we come back to the Twins and the utter weirdness that was Hector Santiago for Ricky Nolasco, how about what I would say was perhaps not billed as the biggest trade and perhaps not the most eye catching of the deadline on Monday, but it pertains to your San Francisco Giants, Darius, and I wanted to get your take on the Matt Moore for Matt Duffy plus swap, which I know that the cost of pitching is at a premium, and we've talked a bit about it when it comes to relieving, but I think that was the one that really made my pupils dilate and my mouth hit the floor when I read what that package was for Matt Moore, and I wonder if you did the same.
Yeah, I was surprised to see how much we gave up in both deals. Duffy's obviously already proven himself to be a really productive major league player. He's yet another one of these guys we sort of seem to churn off the production line who isn't regarded particularly well as a prospect, and yet they come up. Same with like Joe Panic before him, and you know, turn out to be really good, like 2-3-4 win players that are productive both with the bat and in the field. So I was surprised that he went, along with a couple of our better prospects, especially Lucius Fox, who is pretty highly ranked in the organization. He's still a long way off. He's very young, and he needs some work defensively in particular, but he's very fast, and I think they were, you know, there was some pretty high hopes for him. Moore, it wasn't so long ago that Matt Moore's name was mentioned along with Bryce Harper and Mike Trout as, you know, one of the three best prospects in baseball. So there's obviously a lot of pedigree there, and I think he has improved of late. One issue that he's really had is giving up home runs, and if you give up a lot of home runs, then AT&T is a really good place to come and pitch. So I'm hopeful that he can turn it around. All we really need is for him to be a good number three starter, because we've got Cueto and we've got Bumgarner. And we just need it to not be like the Matt Cain disaster show that we're having at the back of the rotation.
Yeah, anything would be better than Matt Cain and Jake Peavy, I guess.
Yeah, so I think the Giants, you know, we're not expecting him to be what everybody hoped Matt Moore might once have been. But I think there are signs that he can sort of get back more towards being at least a number three starter. And that would be certainly good enough for the Giants down the stretch.
Great. We'll stay in the National League. We've talked about the Cubs already. I'd quite like to talk about a team that's had quite a lot of flack over the course of the last week in the columns and the podcasts. That's the Washington Nationals, who, according to common view and common feeling, had an absolutely rotten trade deadline, seemingly because they didn't give up four elite prospects to sign Aroldis Chapman or Andrew Miller, and went quote unquote the cheapskates route in signing one of the best closers in baseball for decidedly less in terms of prospect cachet than some of the best prospects in baseball, Trey Turner, Lucas Giolito, which was the asking price for Miller and for Chapman. Did you guys take the view of the, you know, the Buster Olneys and the Jason Starks and and the effectively Worlds in thinking that Melanson was a cheapskate to Rita, or do you, like me, think that was a really quite savvy and underappreciated move from the Nationals to solve the problem at the back of their bullpen, which is both Jonathan Papelbon's pitching, his ego, and his rotten sensibility?
I think Melanson's hugely underrated, really. I was just looking at he hasn't had a whip over one since 2012. He just doesn't walk anybody. And he's exactly what you need, really, in your bullpen. And he's cost next to nothing, as you said, in comparison to the other trades. So I think it's absolute great purchase, really. I'm surprised that the Pirates were, you know, three or four more wins and they probably weren't selling at all. But they've got options as well. They've got Tony Watson who will come in, and he's a very good player. So they're not losing huge amounts. But
it was a good deal for the Pirates, unquestionably.
But yeah, I think it's a good deal for I think it's exactly what the Nationals need as well. And Papelbon has been far from himself. You know, he does go. He's not the sort of shutdown guy, and I think that's exactly what Melanson. He just doesn't strike as many people out as Chapman, and that's kind of what people see, I think.
Darius, any thoughts from you?
Yeah, I thought it was a really nice deal. You know, giving up basically just a younger reliever, pitches earlier innings. Rivero's, I think, a nice player, and he'll probably be in the majors for a while. But when you see the price that almost every other team gave up to get relievers, then I think they did really nicely. And I don't see a huge amount of weaknesses. It's not like I'm sitting here going, why didn't the Nats upgrade here? You know, they've got some really nice starting pitchers. They've obviously got one of the best players in baseball in Bryce Harper. I don't think...
You mean Daniel Murphy?
And Daniel Murphy, you know, there's not a huge amount of holes, unlike some other teams we might get onto later, where you were sitting there going, why didn't they upgrade here? I didn't think that the Nats were a team that needed to do a whole lot. They've got a pretty big lead in the division. And I think it was a nice little move where they didn't spend too much to achieve it.
Great. I think that I know where this is heading, and I'm gonna make an assumption that you're referring to a team that mistook the term corner infielder for another corner outfielder, the New York Mets, who unquestionably added a very good player in Jay Bruce at the deadline, but one that seemed completely surplus to requirements for a team with no center fielder and no corner infielders. So your takes on that?
I was just before that, I've just looked at Pat Light's stats.
Oh, have you? Right.
He's terrible.
That is correct, yeah.
Just consistent. I don't know how he got out of high A. He's just been consistently bad. But yeah, that's not
what he throws the ball very hard, like Joe Kelly. And as we all know, throwing the ball very hard can make people think silly things about pitchers like Joe Kelly. Like, for example, they're going to be in Cy Young contention. But let's not talk about that article that I wrote not 3 months ago.
I should have written... third baseman throw the ball very hard.
Yeah.
Really good.
If only I'd written it about Rick Porcello, it would have been a good article to have written. But nevertheless, so the Mets and Jay Bruce, any thoughts on that, Will?
Well, he's going to give them run support, and they're just going to have to continue to try and score lots of runs. They've got the starting pitching that will hopefully, you know, they've got some strikeout pitches, so... Are they gambling that the ball won't go into the outfield quite as much? And I don't know. It just seems like they haven't really thought through what it could be out there. They've got a lot of, as you say, a lot of substandard. They've got who's even going to play centre field now? Is that Conforto?
Well, it'd be Conforto or Cespedes, I would think.
Yeah, and Cespedes got injured. Because he got. He was injured, and then he was saw him playing golf, and then he's come back, and he's got injured again. And a lot of people are kicking off because they said that golf could have been linked, which it may not have been done. But when you play in New York and you're injured, you probably shouldn't be.
Ioannis is as Ioannis does, Will. He does it once.
Yeah. I'm sure he didn't have a buggy. I'm sure he had some sort of unorthodox transportation to get him from hole to hole.
Yeah, so, he did, yeah. So, Segway.
He's gonna offer undoubted run support. He's gonna hit home runs for sure. But they needed a quality defensive centre fielder who'd be much cheaper, by far cheaper.
Or a catcher, or a third baseman, or a first baseman, any of the above. Darius, what was your take on the Mets?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think you look at their outfield and probably Granderson has been their best player, and now Bruce looks like he's pushing Granderson to the bench more often unless they want to play him in centre field. Conforto isn't really a centre fielder. Juan Lagares is the best centre fielder on the roster, really. And, you know, he's hurt, so I'm not really quite sure what they were thinking. Bruce has power, but he doesn't have a lot else. He's certainly not been a good defensive player for a while now. And yeah, as you say, there are several other spots that you could point to and say you could have made a move here. So I'm not sure what they're thinking. I don't think they strike enough guys out to pay this little attention to outfield defense. I think you probably have to strike out almost everybody to pay this little attention to it.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a head scratcher for me. And Dilson Herrera is not like a world beater, but he's a useful player, and I think he will probably be the starting second baseman for the Reds in the fairly near future. So it was a little bit of a head scratcher to me as to why they gave him up to get someone who really doesn't add an awful lot to their team.
It was pointed out that the Mets are only one game ahead of the Yankees, and they're buying and the Yankees are selling. I know they're chasing different totals, but it's interesting how you wouldn't think the Yankees would sell if it was absolutely necessary. The Mets, because of last year, must be just thinking they have to try and continue to compete, irrespective of how far they're dropping back behind the Nationals. And the Marlins, I think, are ahead of them as well at the moment. So
yeah, I was going to say, I mean, they're playing a different game to the one they were playing last year. The Marlins were absolutely nowhere last year. And the Nationals are better. The Marlins are a hell of a lot better. And the Mets, without David Wright, without Lucas Duda, and with, you know, Yoenis being Yoenis, are a hell of a... And no Matt Harvey, of course, either. So they're in a hell of a lot worse position. I just found this completely baffling. I couldn't believe they were anywhere near the conversation for a player like that. Nice as he is and good as of a guy as he is. What about the Dodgers, your West Coast rivals, Darius? They made a couple of, I think, fairly nice pickups on Monday in Rich Hill and Josh Reddick.
Yeah, if you listen to Effectively Wild, you'll obviously know that Rich Hill is quite the fancied player there.
Best pitcher in baseball.
Best pitcher in baseball, exactly. And they need to replace the best pitcher in baseball, so they might as well go out and get the other best pitcher in baseball. The problem really is whether he can actually stay on the mound. I think if he does, then it's a really nice pickup for them. Hopefully he's over this blister he's got. I think he's kept him out for about 3 weeks now. They kept sort of saying he would come back and he didn't. But he's been really excellent every time he's pitched this year. And Reddick is, I think, just a product of the Puig situation, which has gotten really strange. We don't know what's happening there, but obviously he's done something to make the Dodgers say, we've had enough, we're not dealing with this anymore. So they've sent him down. Reddick's going to play right field. I think that should be a nice upgrade for the Dodgers because Puig hasn't been very good this year. It's going to be a pretty close division race down the last couple of months now, I think.
Great. I don't feel like I have anything really to add to that. That sums it up nicely. I think Reddick is a nice player. I think he's one of those players who's in for a nice payday this winter because it's a pretty thin class when it comes to quality in terms of the free agents. And I think one or two teams might well cover a good quality right fielder who can hit situationally as Reddick does. I'm sure he'll bring a lot to the Dodgers for the next couple of months. Moving over to the AL, we've talked already a lot about the Yankees, who I think we unanimously thought won the whole piece. And a lot about the Indians. We talked about the Andrew Miller trade and the collapse of the Jonathan Lucroy trade in passing, which I think was a real shame. Just sort of settling on Lucroy for a moment. He ended up at the Texas Rangers, and again, to me, I think that the additions they made whilst both excellent players in Lucroy and Carlos Beltran and actually Jeremy Jeffress coming in the Lucroy deal as well, who I think is a really good reliever who's going to go on to have a good career over the next 2 or 3 years. I kind of feel like they completely missed the biggest hole in their team, which is their 3-5 in their starting rotation. And again, I wonder if they're looking like the Mets in trying to take that, well, we'll bash one more home run than you, and we'll hit one more double than you, and we'll beat you 8-7, which an awful lot of the AL teams seem to be doing this year. I mean, did you guys sort of see the same that same thing as I did?
I think they did well to hold on to some of the... They were going to have to give up on Profar or Gallo and find somebody. So with Gallo, it was a case of finding somebody that really, probably the Mets would have, just somebody that hits lots of home runs for a poor average and is subject defensively. And it could well have been that they just didn't want to give up on those sort of prize assets. In terms of their starting rotation, as you say, it's a bit top heavy.
I mean, their 1 and 2 are seriously good, but yeah.
Yeah, and then they've got the sort of dependable guys at the bottom. Jeffress, good signing. I think he'll do a job, and Lucroy will massively increase the catcher position. So they have made upgrades around the team. Whether they were too worried about completely selling out for the quest of sort of now. And they've kind of sat back and just thought we've improved, and that's really pushed them to really solid favourites for the division and see where. And then once you obviously get to the postseason, you're less dependent on the bottom of your order as well, which is obviously something that'll come to light, because they're looking very likely to get to the postseason.
Sure, but if I know the Red Sox were the team mentioned in dispatches in the Chris Sale sweepstakes, but even as a Red Sox fan, and perhaps this is because I've sort of picked up the Boston love of hugging my prospects, I always thought the Rangers were the team that could do it if they really wanted to, and I think that says a lot about how high that price got for Sale and indeed for Jose Quintana, that a team with that stack to deal from chose to go a different route and to pick up two really, really excellent position players and a very good reliever for probably the same, if not a lesser price than they would have paid for Sale.
Yeah, I think Sale's recent episode, maybe they questioned his mental side. I quite liked him kind of taking things into his own hands, but
I loved it.
Had a really good start. He's not been quite the pitch. He hasn't been getting nearly enough strikeouts, and maybe there's just a few two question marks that the last couple of months haven't gone as well. And when they were looking at what they were going to have to give up, and I'm sure the White Sox were asking a lot, they made the decision they made, and that's where we are.
Darius, have you got any thoughts on the Rangers? Did I mean, they, no one can dislike the pickups that they made, although they paid a big price for Lucroy and Jeffress, but it did seem to be a sort of a plan B for me.
I think this is perhaps as much about Hamels and Darvish as it is about how bad the back of the rotation is. I think they saw, maybe they didn't really see an awful lot of players they could get for a price they liked in the rotation, so they went for the bullpen. I think they're obviously thinking that they'll just hand it over much earlier. They've got some pretty nice pieces in the pen now. You mentioned Jeffress. They also traded for a lefty from the Braves, Dario Alvarez, who's looking pretty promising. He's still very new to the majors, but he's got some really good stuff and could potentially be a really nice reliever for them long term as well. And they've also got Tony Barnett, came over from Japan this year. He's pitched well. Sam Dyson's been really good. The returning Matt Bush, of course, has had a pretty good year. So I think they're just kind of going to go to these pretty uninspiring starters for 4 or 5 innings, and then they're going to say, we'll be a bit more willing to hand over to the bullpen earlier. They have got Colby Lewis, who's, I think, is supposed to come back maybe end of August, start of September. So perhaps they're also thinking, we don't want to invest too much here, and that they're going to hope that Lewis comes back and gives them some good innings in September and into the playoffs.
Yeah, they decided against giving up Durex and Profar for Jeremy Hellickson and went for a different option, and that's a trade I would have loved to have seen, if only to see Keith Law's incandescent reaction.
I'm sure the Phillies would have been delighted to see it too.
Yeah. So yeah, the Rangers now seem to be the sort of the leading horse, the sort of the red rum or the Shergar of the pack in the AL. We'll move on to some of the other runners and riders, and I'd like to talk a little bit about the baffling case of the Baltimore Orioles, the Bash Brothers of the AL East, with Chris Davis, Mark Trumbo, and now Steve Pearce added to that lineup of huge dinger hitters that seem to be relying hugely on the lack of plate discipline of opposing starting pitchers and then hitting three-run home runs to win many a lucky game in the eighth and ninth inning. I'm not letting my own emotions about the Baltimore Orioles get the better of me here. At least I hope I'm not. A strange old trade deadline for Baltimore, but I think perhaps that's sort of telling of their lack of prospect depth, that all they managed to come away with when in a situation that they really didn't expect at the start of the season was Steve Pearce and cow milking's own Wade Miley on Monday.
Yeah, it was a strange little haul for them. I think one thing Miley gives them is just innings. They need somebody at the back of that rotation who they could sort of rely on to actually just pitch somewhat deep into games. Gallardo has been terrible. Ubaldo Jimenez has been worse. So it's pretty ugly back there. But like we've talked about already a couple of times, we've seen teams with not particularly exciting rotations do well in recent years, and they've got a great bullpen, and they might break the single season home run record for a team this year as well. So with those two things combined, I think all you really need is somebody to keep you close, and they've got Tillman at the front there, who's been really nice this season, and hopefully Gausman can sort of put it all together for them as well. So I think, yeah, it's not the flashiest trade deadline, but I do think Pearce is a nice addition for them, and it will make that lineup a little bit deeper.
I like Gausman. Yeah. Sorry, Will, go on.
So Dylan Bundy's been really good over the last few starts.
Yeah, he has. That's true. Yeah, he is to all intents and purposes, even after three starts, their number two pitcher behind Tillman, with Miley and Gausman vying it out for the number three spot. Yeah, and you're right, Darius, about their bullpen. They definitely are a team who are in the same mould as the Royals, Will's favoured Royals from last year, with Darren O'Day and Zach Britton especially just looking absolutely unhittable. I read someone compare him to Mariano Rivera a couple of weeks ago and didn't wince in so doing, because he is a guy who, quite like Mariano, you just know exactly what he's going to throw at you, but you still can't hit it. He is really, really impressive in some ways, maybe even more so than Chapman and Miller and Kimbrell, who's had his ups and downs this year. Staying in the AL East, let's talk about the Boston Red Sox, my team, who didn't do an awful lot on Monday. They picked up Fernando Abad for the previously discussed awful, rotten, horrible, lanky Pat Light. they did most of their business earlier on, and I think that meant a lot of people kind of forgot what they did, but they picked up Drew Pomeranz for their top pitching prospect, Anderson Espinosa, which in all people's eyes was a very high but probably a price that they had to pay. They picked up Brad Ziegler for, I think, a cat and a packet of munchies, and also Aaron Hill from the Brewers, who's come in to sort of ride the bench and make up for the fact that they had an animated broom and Mr. Tumnus from the Chronicles of Narnia taking at-bats in the eighth in a couple of situations earlier in the year. Did you guys have any thoughts on the Red Sox, particularly, I think, the Pomeranz deal, which was the big one for the Sox? Any thoughts about what's going to happen there? I mean, Darius, as an NL West guy, have you seen anything of Pomeranz this year?
Pomeranz has made some really nice improvements this year, and I think from sort of a staff standpoint, they're quite sustainable. He's taken to throwing a cutter a lot more. It's been really effective. So I like the changes he's made to his repertoire. The problem I have with him is the innings, because he's been sort of so injured and then bounced between the bullpen and starting. I think his career high is about 147 innings. That's between the majors and the minors. This is the first time he's pitched 100 innings in a major league season, I believe. He's already at 122. So I worry that he's going to get to September and that's going to be sort of it for him. He's going to be out of gas. So that's my concern with that. I don't mind the trade from the prospect standpoint. Espinosa is a really, really long way off. And we've all seen these prospects who get super hyped and then don't make it to the majors at all, or they sort of barely get in. I mean, Bundy himself was somebody who was sort of supposed to be contributing for the Orioles 3 years ago, and he's only just now started to give them any kind of useful production. So I think that the price was fine and it was a good move for them to make. But I do have some concern about how Pomeranz is going to hold up down the stretch.
Yeah, I think just sort of dwelling on Espinosa briefly, I agree with you that I thought it was a fair price to pay, particularly when you look at Espinosa's low A numbers. He was at Greenville, so a low A pitcher, albeit a very young one. His ERA wasn't mind blowing. It was in the high fours, which for a 19-year-old pitcher is probably fine. His peripherals were good. He wasn't walking many people. He was striking out quite a few. But Michael Kopech, who had missed some time for various reasons and was the Sox number two pitching prospect, is now in Salem, so at the higher level of A ball, and his peripherals are absolutely through the roof. He's striking out 10 batters a game and walking absolutely nobody. So maybe Dave Dombrowski knew what he was doing here yet again. But I guess the proof of the pudding will be in Pomeranz's performance between now and October. And I think the problem for me and the concern as a person who's watching the Red Sox closely and has watched a couple of his starts is not just the number of innings that he pitches, but the number of pitches per inning. He walks a lot of batters. He gets into a lot of good at-bat situations where he's taking 9 or 10 pitches before he gets a ground ball, before he strikes somebody out. And with the Boston bullpen, albeit beefed up, slightly fragile over the course of this year, I'm a little bit concerned that he's going to leave, you know, the Matt Barneses and the Robbie Rosses with 4 or 5 innings to mop up on rather more occasions than we might like when he's finding himself at 96 pitches after 4 2/3. But yeah, we'll see. I like the deal. I think it was a good one for the Red Sox. But it was kind of the deal that they had to make.
The other thing we should mention is that they haven't just got him for this year. He has got another couple of years of team controller. Yeah. So it's not like they've just given up a prospect for a rental like the Chapman deal. It's not that kind of situation.
Yeah, when you put it into perspective and you saw that the Yankees were getting an equivalent prospect to Espinosa in Torres, plus a major league ready seventh inning guy in Adam Warren, who could be stretched out to be a swingman, and two other not insignificant pieces, I must say that I did feel rather better about that Pomeranz for Espinosa one for one. We'll leave the Red Sox there because I, as you can tell, I could probably talk about them for the rest of the evening. And the last team that we'll dwell on before we come to the madness that is Ricky Nolasco and Hector Santiago is the Blue Jays. You had a really, really weird Monday, making some trades that I think have been explained in post hoc fashion by a few people, but which I still can't really get my head round beyond the explanation that Aaron Sanchez is going to have to go to the bullpen, although I still don't see it. So they switched Francisco Liriano from the Pirates for the man who took the opening day start last year for the Blue Jays, Drew Hutchison. There was a bit of salary swapping involved there, but that struck me as a very one-sided deal. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on that.
It doesn't seem like Liriano holds masses of value this year. They got a couple of prospects in with that as well. Apparently, I've heard they're going to go over 6-man rotation to begin
with. Is that
right?
I missed that.
But it's I don't know whether it was on the premise. I think Aaron Sanchez with the, because they're really monitoring how many innings he pitches. Ideally, they want to keep him in the six-man rotation, but sooner or later, somebody's going to go down. And whether they have enough starts or innings for him to pursue a five-man rotation after that is it would probably mean he'll end up in the bullpen at some stage. Bringing in Mike Bolsinger as well. They've brought in some these sort of... Nobody's going to grab any headlines. Just, as you say, innings eaters. And Liriano's got a really serious walk problem. He's not going to have an awful lot of fun in the Rogers Centre, I don't think. So they know they're in a strong position. And what's more, that division, probably two, maybe three, maybe one, we'll see, are going to go into the postseason. So it sort of screams a little bit of a panic and a scramble because most of the deals were done on the last day as well. There wasn't a lot of action done beforehand. But they brought in Melvin Upton, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. That was another really strange deal where they definitely got they were definitely on the right side of the Upton deal, I think. They had got money and Melvin Upton for not an awful lot in terms of prospect return. We'll see. That looked like a nice trade for them. But then there was some really sort of slightly odd, I was just looking it up again, some moves for relievers. They sent Jesse Chavez to the Dodgers, as you said, for Mike Bolsinger. Forgive me. And they brought in Scott Feldman for the Astros, who gave up a walk-off hit in his debut. Lucky him. Darius, any thoughts from you on what the Blue Jays did and any attempts to try and talk Will and I around that was anything other than a completely bizarre Monday in Toronto?
Well, I think Liriano, it was, you know, so long ago that he was one of the better starters in the league. You know, last couple of years, he really seemed to have figured it out in Pittsburgh. He was really productive and he's still striking guys out, but he's got the walk issue that Will mentioned, and he's giving up a lot of home runs. I don't think going from PNC to the Rogers Centre is really going to help him there.
No.
I also think that the Pirates seemed pretty keen to get him off. His deal was not that expensive, and the Pirates obviously just wanted to get him off the roster so they could free up that salary. So that doesn't fill me with a huge amount of confidence. They obviously think he's done. If he could, you know, recapture any of his former form, then I think the Blue Jays will be happy with having him down the stretch, but I'm not awfully confident. And who knows what's going to happen with this Sanchez situation where they sort of keep bouncing back and forth between whether they're keeping him in the rotation or not. I don't know how long their nerve will hold. And I suspect it sounds like Gibbons doesn't want to take him out, and perhaps there's a lot of pressure coming from the front office to remove him. So I don't know quite how that one's going to end up. So it was a little bit of a strange one. I think Upton is a nice little pickup, and certainly Michael Saunders is having a great year, but he's had a lot of injury problems in the past. Bautista's just come back from an injury, so I think Upton's a really nice sort of fourth outfielder guy to come and fill in if one of those guys does get injured. And I think they're still a pretty strong contender to win the division. It's all going to be pretty close there.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think it does sort of bring another slightly fascinating aspect to what's going to happen over the next two months in the AL East. The Liriano point about him walking and giving up home runs doesn't really bode well when you're in a division with Trumbo and Davis and Ortiz and Mookie Betts. But we'll see. I think they're going to be able to bash their way into the playoffs come hell or high water, and then they don't have to pitch either. Liriano on Sanchez can come out of the bullpen in the way that he did last year in front of Roberto Osuna and blow everyone away because Jay Happ and Marco Estrada, despite looking like a pair of IT consultants, are pitching like no one's business. So Marcus Stroman is sort of an afterthought in that rotation, and everyone's least favorite wholesome uncle, R.A. Dickey, very much the fifth starter. So, right, one last thing to talk about before we call it a night, chaps, and that is, where we put Will on the spot to try and defend what on earth the Minnesota Twins were doing in sending a half decent prospect and an admittedly wretched pitcher to Los Angeles, to Anaheim, in order to pick up an admittedly better pitcher, but one who's going to make literally zero difference in the outcome to the Minnesota Twins season.
Right, okay. We were talking about our favourite players earlier. One of my favourite players, and still is Donald Spann, who was traded away for Alex Meyer ages ago, when we first year when we were awful. So I had a lot of time for Meyer, and he was like the number one prospect pitcher for a long time. But every time he hasn't been managed very well, and he's come into the big leagues, and he's always been a bit Pat Light for me. So I think the Twins didn't value him so high, and the Angels clearly do still see something there. And it was almost like Ricky Nolasco was a detriment to the deal, if you see what I mean, because he's owed so much money and he's been so bad so consistently. He had a little spell this at the start of this year because he's 33 years of age, which isn't too old for a pitcher. But I think the Twins were looking to get rid of Ricky Nolasco, and the only way they could do that was to give a prospect up as well. And we've got Hector Santiago, who will slot in maybe 4 or 5. He's not that expensive. He's got a year of arbitration next year. So really, really looking at it, I can see a little bit of light. But it just seems like two teams that aren't competing doing a deal. And I've looked into Alan Busnitz, and he's a sort of prospect. But really, it was Alex Meyer for those three. They wanted Meyer, and they had to take Nolasco's salary with them. And I think they got $4 million back as well. So it was just a big mess of nothing, with the Angels hoping that Alex Meyer will turn into something. But he's 26 years old. He's barely a prospect anymore. And he just walks too many people and just gives up too many home runs, which is
What do you think about Santiago? Do you think he's going to get flipped in the winter, or do you see him as a reasonable part of your rotation next year?
I think we've got a couple of big contracts still on the roster in Santana, who was looking like he could be a trade candidate because he was pitching really well. So those two aren't really going to go anywhere. And then we've got Barrios, who should be, and Duffy, and
Phil Hughes. You're forgetting the best of the lot of them. Phil Hughes.
I mean, Phil Hughes and what's his face?
Santana.
Santana were the guys with the big payrolls, because we have one good year out of Hughes and then gave him a little more money. So we've got too many starting pitchers, or Tommy Malone as well. So they might try, and he's not going to be particularly expensive in the arbitration year. So I think it's just we'll see how he pitches until the end of September, really, and then they'll take it from there. He's a better idea of a pitcher for next year than Ricky Nolasco certainly was. And they've made so many bad decisions bringing in those sort of mid-range starter pitchers in the winter to try and help. You'd rather just bring in one blockbuster than go down that sort of route, I think. So it's not filled anybody with any excitement, but I can see a little bit of upside on the Twins side, and a little bit of upside for the Angels as well.
What do you think, Darius? I mean, I'm going to ask you to boldly step in and sort of argue the case for the Angels. I mean, is it all about Alex Meyer for you, or is there some sort of weird alchemy that you think that Nolasco is going to settle on the Sunshine Coast down in Orange County?
Nolasco is one of those guys, and if you've played fantasy for a while, you'll know this, that everybody gets excited because he always seems to have better peripherals than his actual ERA. And I think maybe one year he actually did have a really nice ERA, and every other year everybody said, oh, Ricky Nolasco should, improve. He's getting unlucky, and he just always seems to end up with his terrible ERA. It's a nicer place to pitch for him, I think. And I don't think the Angels have any concern about taking on that contract, really. But it's really hard to see a way that he's going to be more than a back end of the rotation guy at best now at 33.
Alex Meyer. Should they not have got more than they did for one of the very few players who was a viable trade candidate amidst a pile of horrible mess?
I mean, I think if Santiago maybe had had more control or had been having a better year, then they could have done. But it was kind of a case of there wasn't an awful lot to sell on there. I think they do have some better pieces on their roster to sell off than this. Whether they'll do it or not is another matter. Santiago walks too many guys for my liking, so I don't think there's a huge amount there to get excited about. He also gives up quite a lot of fly balls, which I'm not sure is going to play better in Minnesota than it did in Los Angeles. Meyer, I think the Twins, he's got a shoulder injury right now, is that right?
Yeah, he hasn't pitched since sort of late May, I don't think.
Yeah, so I think they were in denial about that for a while and they shut him down with that, which doesn't really fill me with a huge amount of confidence. A long time ago, unlike Matt Moore, I think there was quite a lot of excitement about him, but that seems like a really long time ago now. So it's worth a shot for both of them, but I think it's a pretty low percentage gamble for both teams. I think the good thing for the Twins is they've got a relatively expensive contract off their books and they can sort of look to the future. I don't see a way forward for the Angels at the moment. I feel sorry for Mike Trout.
Yeah. Well, actually, that sort of brings us back round full circle. I forgot to mention a player that I wouldn't go so far as to say I hate him, but a player I don't really like is Mike Trout. Maybe that really is a whole podcast in and of itself. Is it even humanly feasible to dislike Mike Trout? Well, it is because he's got no personality, and there's no fun in that. to borrow from a famous TV program about cars, on that bombshell, I think that's probably a good place as any to leave it. So thanks, guys. But before we leave you for this evening and for this first episode of Batflips and Nerds, we've got a few quick parish notices. Will, where can we find you on Twitter?
My handle is DPR1986.
And Darius, where can we find you?
I am DariusA64.
And me, John, I'm at Epuvontail, which I won't spell for you. But if you have no idea how to spell it, Google the French translation for scarecrow, and that's what it is. Which is a long story. Another one. Maybe it'll be a twin episode, me talking about why I dislike Mike Trout and why my handle is the French word for scarecrow. And the Batflips and Nerds Twitter is @Batflips_nerds. And episodes of this podcast can be found on SoundCloud, www.soundcloud.com/Batflips and Nerds. And the blog is found at www.batflipsandnerds.wordpress.com. If you've enjoyed this, tell a friend. If you've got any friends who are into baseball, point them in the direction of the Twitter, of the blog, of the SoundCloud. We're going to put this up on iTunes in due course, and we'll be asking you to give us a rating because it really helps, because everyone says it at the end of their podcast. But for the time being, we're going to get a couple of episodes in the can and take it from there. We hope you've enjoyed it, and we'll hear from you next time. Cheers.